next on The Balanced Word.
When we don't know the heart of God, as is demonstrated so much in Jesus Christ, our lack of knowing His heart causes our hearts to become corrupt and causes us to judge people that He doesn't judge, that He wants to draw to Himself, that He wants to show love to, that He wants to deliver them and then say, you don't have to live this way anymore. You can walk in forgiveness. For us, no, we just want them to be, you know, taken care of. We want judgment to be poured out. When we want judgment to be poured out, we are betraying the fact that we really don't know our Father's heart at all.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Hey, great to have you in our listening family, and welcome once again to The Balanced Word. In John chapter 8, we find some religious leaders bringing to Jesus a young woman they caught in the very act of adultery. They were looking to condemn her. How Jesus responds perfectly answers the question of what God is like and how we should treat those in sin. So let's join Pastor Dave Rolfe as he begins today's lesson.
There are people who would say that this story doesn't belong in the New Testament because two of the older manuscripts have left this story out. But I believe absolutely that it does belong. The passage doesn't flow otherwise. Or even though it's not in two of the early codices, two of the early manuscripts, it was in older sermons that church fathers preached. They used this passage long before those were even created. It was in older translations that came. And so I believe that it belongs in the original. And besides that, like I heard an old pastor say one time, I know it was there because God gave me a sermon from it. So there you go. John chapter 8, beginning with verse 1. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say? This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger as though he did not hear. So when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, He who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest, even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you? And she said, No one, Lord. And Jesus said to her, Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. It tells us that they brought this woman who was caught in the act of adultery to Jesus in order to test him. See, here's the test. Jesus was getting very popular, and the religious leaders resented him and were threatened by him. They already wanted to kill him. We've learned as we've read through the previous chapters. So the test was this. Jesus is really popular. Now, if we bring a woman to him and he says, stone her, then he's going to be less popular. People are like, wow. See, stoning was something that was in the law for adultery, but there were a lot of conditions to it. It was a very tricky thing. Not only that, at this time in the Roman Empire, the Jews did not have the right to stone people. They couldn't execute someone. That had to come through the Roman courts, as we know from when Jesus was tried. It had to go through the Romans for it to happen. So they wanted to see, what's he going to do? Is he going to say, I'm perfect according to the law, and therefore, yes, stone her, and then he's busted from the Romans? Or is he going to say, no, 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 don't do it, let's be nice, and they're going to go, aha, you're not keeping the law. This is what the law says. You claim to have been involved in writing the law, and yet you're not enforcing it. They thought they would really trap him, and that's what they were trying to do. Now, let me say as a side note, and many people have pointed this out in the passage, you don't commit adultery by yourself. You know, there was a man who was involved in this. And yet here we see what sometimes this has become a religious tradition in all faiths, including Christianity, I have to admit, that sometimes we seem to blame women for stuff. I mean, women grow up and they're told that, oh, if you are too attractive, then it's your fault that men would, you know, even attack you and abuse you, or that men would be tempted by you. And we've made this whole religious thing that women need to make themselves as unattractive as possible because you're the reason why men are such creeps. The truth is, men don't need any help. You know, in cultures where women wear a robe with nothing showing but their eyes, men are still attracted to basically a big trash bag with a hole in the face. So, you know, but it's horrible the way that women then grow up with this feeling of it's my fault, I can't be attractive, I can't be the way God made me, and it's ridiculous. It's wrong, it's a sin. And here, they're going at that again. But they were condemning her for doing something that she actually apparently did. But when we look at this, we see Jesus and his compassion, and there's something a lot more going on. And I ask myself, what did Jesus see in this woman that caused him to be so compassionate to her? What was it that they couldn't see that caused them to lash out at her? And as we look at the rest of this chapter, we're going to see, but ultimately what this was about is Jesus looked at the woman who was being condemned, who they wanted to kill, and he saw himself in that woman. Because these same people were really trying to kill him. And they were willing to kill her just to trap him. And so he knew what it was like to be condemned. He knew what it was like to be judged by people. And he looked at this girl and he's like, boy, this feels really familiar to me. And then as he goes through a long argument with these guys, he basically shows us the reasons why they were so judgmental against her, and the reasons why they were so judgmental against him. Why did they judge him? And ultimately, as we look at this passage, we're going to figure out something about ourselves. We're going to figure out, why are we so judgmental against people who fail? And why are some people so quick to reject Jesus Christ, to judge him and say, I refuse to follow him? I think in this passage, you will see a lot of the reasons why people don't want to accept Jesus, and they're a lot of the same reasons why we tend to be so hard on other people when they've sinned, and to be judgmental. So in verse 13, it starts out with this. The Pharisees therefore said to him, you bear witness of yourself. Your witness is not true. Jesus answered and said to them, even if I bear witness of myself, my witness is true, for I know where I came from and where I am going, but you do not know where I come from and where I am going. He puts his finger on one central issue for them. And it, by the way, also applies to this girl. It's like, you don't know my past and you don't know my future. All you see is what I am doing at this moment, and you are judging me. In the same way, when we judge people like they judge this girl, There's no vision of even, how did she get to this point? What is it in her past that might have led her so far off track? But also, what is it in her future? As Jesus said to her, you can go and be free, and you don't have to keep sinning the way you've been. You don't have to keep missing the mark. You don't have to mess your life up anymore. Jesus looked at her, and he understood her past, and he had a vision for her future, and he gave her that. And they looked at Jesus in the same way, and they're just like, I see what you're saying right now, but I am oblivious to whatever you claim your past is. That's irrelevant. And I really don't care about your future. I'm really not worried about the fact that someday you're going to sit on a throne and you're finally going to judge everyone. They were ignorant of both the past and the future. And anyone who judges others, that's what we're guilty of. Because we see someone and what they're doing right now, and we make a snap judgment, and we don't understand what happened in the past, and we don't have a vision of what could happen in the future, and we just judge people right there. The second thing we see in verse 15, Jesus said to them, you judge according to the flesh, and I judge no one. So he said, you guys are in the flesh. He also, over in verse 23, said, you're from beneath, I'm from above. You are of this world, I'm not of this world. And later over in verse 44, he said, you're of your father, the devil. In other words, where you are coming from, where the way that you are thinking, it is your flesh. It is your own selfish perspective. It is your own arrogance and pride. It is the fact that you are not thinking about this from a spiritual picture. You're only looking at it from a fleshly picture. You don't understand the Spirit of God. All you understand is this is how you feel, and what you feel is in your flesh. And that's why they rejected Jesus, because of a lack of sensitivity to the Spirit. Same reason why they judged her. Same reason why we judge others. We get in the flesh. We feel upset or offended, or it's just like we want to put other people down, and we do it. And it's always the flesh. Remember, before you judge someone else, Jesus says, I don't judge anyone. You judge according to the flesh. I don't judge anyone. He had made this clear to Nicodemus in John 3 when he said that God loved the world so much that he sent his only son, that whoever would believe in him wouldn't perish but have eternal life. And then he says, for God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world. They're already condemned. He sent him to save the world. He didn't come to judge. And he says, I don't judge. Now, do you want to face him and explain to him why you judge when he doesn't? That's how twisted we can become when we just allow our flesh to tell us what to do. Then look down to verse 19. They said to him, where's your father? He was talking about coming from the father. The father sent me and bears witness of me. They're like, where is your father? And Jesus answered, you don't know me nor my father. If you had known me, you would have known my father also. When we judge, it shows that we really don't know our father, that we really don't know God. If we knew God, we would have his heart. If we knew him, then we would have and show the kind of grace that Jesus showed. Remember the story of the prodigal son. When the son went off, wasted his inheritance, came back poor and defeated, and his father ran to him and hugged him and put his coat on him and threw a party for him. And the point of the story was the older brother was like mad at his dad for loving his brother. What that demonstrated, and the Pharisees took it very personally when Jesus told that story, is that the son who's older just doesn't know his father's heart. If he had known his father's heart, he would have gone looking for his brother. He certainly would have been happy for him to come back. But when we don't know the heart of God, as is demonstrated so much in Jesus Christ, our lack of knowing his heart causes our hearts to become corrupt and causes us to judge people that he doesn't judge. that he wants to draw to himself, that he wants to show love to, that he wants to deliver them and then say, you don't have to live this way anymore. You can walk in forgiveness. For us, no, we just want them to be, you know, taken care of. We want judgment to be poured out. When we want judgment to be poured out, we are betraying the fact that we really don't know our Father's heart at all. And then as he talks more, you're from beneath, I'm from above, and so on. But then look over at verse 30. As he spoke these words, he was talking about, you know, being the Son of Man, of being from God and coming from him. As he spoke the words, it says, many believed in him. That's awesome. Many people actually there in the area of the temple believed Jesus. They're like, that makes sense. But look, then Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I mean, that's awesome. Doesn't that feel like, wow? Ann and I were talking about this passage this morning as she got up early and made pancakes for me before I came to church. And we were talking about this, and she said, when I hear that the Son, later on he says, the Son makes you free, you'll be free indeed. She goes, that's just like so refreshing. But here's how they responded to it. He says, I will make you free. The truth will set you free. And they answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free? Whoa, first of all, they needed a history lesson. Since Abraham, how about 400 years of captivity in Egypt? How about 40 years of captivity in Babylon? Not us. You don't need to set us free. We're free already. They were in complete denial that they were even enslaved. And Jesus told them most assuredly in verse 34, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. And they began to argue with them again. It's like, whoops, I believe you. But not if it means I have to admit that I'm a slave. Not if it means that I have to assent to the fact that I am continuing to sin, that I'm falling short of the glory of God. The being a slave to sin means that you do things that aren't best for you. And that's something that we all have in common. But some people rejected him because they just didn't want to admit who they really were. They did not want to have to say, yes, I am a slave to sin. Yes, I fail. Yes, I come short. They were like, that's not me. It's amazing how easy it is for us to judge other people for just being addicted to things that we're not addicted to when we are in fact addicted to other things. You know, the truth is we are all slaves of sin. And when he's talking about the Son making you free, it's something that's future. It's also in the middle voice, which in Greek means that this is something that you work through. This is something that you are involved in this process along with God. It's really easy for us to judge someone who is addicted to substances. Like, oh, how can you be an addict? That's awful. And yet, we might be addicted to food. Well, that's different. That's something spiritual. Come on. Every month together, we feed that addiction. And so we can sit here and not admit, you know what? There are things that are destroying me that I am addicted to. Maybe it's the way I treat people. Maybe it's the way I destroy relationships. Maybe it's the way I'm a workaholic and I try to find all my satisfaction in work. Maybe it's the way I neglect my family. It's like every one of us needs to understand, I'm guilty. I am trapped. I am judged. I am absolutely enslaved to behavior. Now, you know, we can As you grow, as you get older, there are certain sins that just kind of drop out of your life. And that's good. For a lot of us, we can go, yeah, before I was a Christian, you know, I did this and this and this, and now I don't do that. And I have to confess, some of the things that I used to do, God just took them away from me as soon as I became a Christian. Some of the sins I used to commit, I'm too tired to do them now. But there's something that I still do really well, and it comes up whenever I judge people, and it's the worst sin of all, and that is pride. The scriptures is very clear that pride is the worst sin, that when I judge someone else and look down on them, I am committing the worst sin that there is. C.S. Lewis calls pride the mother of all sins because he says, pride is what made the devil the devil. Now, when I am judging others in a prideful way, what does that tell me about me? I don't realize that though I have dropped some addictions, I have exchanged those addictions for other addictions. And I am someone who needs to be set free. I am someone who continues to sin. And if that really stumbles you, that, oh no, a pastor is addicted to sins, well, look in the mirror and we're all the same. There is never a point until I get to heaven when I break my addictions completely. But do you understand how ironic it is? If I am throwing stones at someone for their slavery, when in fact I am a slave of sin myself. I just happen to be in a different cell. I just have to be enslaved in maybe a little different way. But here I am judging. They didn't get it. Like, you think you're not slaves, but you are slaves. You're slaves to sin. If you're doing anything that's less than God's standard of perfection for your life, man, it's because you're a slave. And why don't you want to be delivered from that? Get involved in that process, but especially, how dare you throw stones at others when you're the same? How dare you throw stones at Jesus himself, who hasn't, he's the one guy that had the right to stone the girl. If it means, if you're without fault, cast the first stone. He could have, and he didn't. And he said, I don't judge. So how arrogant and prideful we are when we lift a stone to throw at another, when ultimately we're all guilty. It's a full-time job for me to deal with my own garbage. I don't have the time or the energy or the right to judge somebody else.
You're listening to The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. As we go through the Gospel of John together, there may come a time when you'd like to hear a message again. You can do so rather easily at thebalancedword.com or call and request a CD copy at 949-362-7475. By the way, we're making this complete series in John available to you on a thumb drive for a donation of $10 or more. Go through this powerful gospel from start to finish with Pastor Dave. Again, call 949-362-7475 and we can help you with that. Please remember, it's your support that allows us to bring the teaching of God's Word to the radio every day. Thank you for standing with us. Again, we can be reached at 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. We'd like to invite you to visit us at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Pastor Dave Rolfe teaches most weekends, and you can hear him teach the Word Sunday morning at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. He always enjoys meeting his listeners, so please say hi after the service. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With some concluding thoughts, here once again is Pastor Dave.
I get really grieved when I see people who their whole life is all about judging other people. Oh, you know, did you see this, what this politician's doing, or this business person, or this country, or this? You know what? When I get free, which is when I'm in heaven, then I could finally do that, and then in heaven I'm not going to be able to find anybody to throw stones at anyway, because we all got there the same way. So important for us to understand. People will reject Jesus because they just don't want to own up to their own stuff. And we will judge others for the exact same reason. I think that their sin stinks worse than mine. And it doesn't. It's the same. But he says, you can be free. They didn't want to be free because the way to be free is to admit that you're a slave. And they couldn't face that.
We'll share a special message for Easter tomorrow, Good Friday, on The Balanced Word. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel, online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up.